Welcome to the Middle Church Podcast, a multicultural, multi-ethnic, intergenerational movement of spirit and justice, powered by revolutionary love with room for everyone. No matter where you are, how you look, or who you love, we pray this podcast will help you on your journey. Here's this week's sermon.
Good morning. Good morning. Thank you so much for inviting me to participate in your worship today. It's such an honor to be here, and it's an honor to connect with you all. And I spend a lot of time in France. I'm going to share with you about one of my favorite Black Madonnas, but I am a lover of a Black Madonna. I am enraptured by the Black Madonna. And thankfully, it's my work, but it's also my vocation and my love and my passion. And more, a few years ago when I was in France, I usually go there for a few months a year to spend time on the ground with the French Black Madonnas. And a few years ago, I was spending some time with the Black Madonna that I'm going to tell you about today, Our Lady of the Sick, who I have nicknamed She Who Cherishes Our Hot Mess. And I was being reminded of how much she holds us in care, how much she loves our messiness, how much she loves our humanity, how much she loves our teachable moments, and loves the times when we find ourselves at the end of our rope, loves the times when we bring her our big, loud, ugly cries. That's her offering. I mean, that's, she receives it as her special offering. It's like, oh, it's so beautiful, and I'll tell you more. But I was spending some time with her in Vichy, France, and I got up in the morning to go running, and I often pray and run while I'm in France, and the ground there is so sacred. The pre-Roman people who lived there over 2,000 years ago called it Namasos, which means the sacred forest. And so they understood it to be sacred as well. And the entire region is surrounded by a chain of volcanic mountains. And so the ground itself is pitch black because it's the lava rock. And so I love to run when I'm there in France, and I find that I can drop into a headspace that's even more sacred than I often experience here in the United States. And I was asking myself, when did I first learn that my need was unacceptable, that needing to be taught, needing to be corrected, needing to be encouraged, needing to be accepted for who I am was just, ugh. Like, when did I learn that as a little girl? And as I was running, I was reminded of this ritual that my parents had in my home. My beloved parents, who were doing the best they could, but were certainly chained to the white patriarchal God who does not tolerate humanity, does not tolerate need, does not tolerate a learning curve, doesn't tolerate need at all. And so they were trying to prepare us to be pleasing to this God and pleasing to a society that hates Black bodies and doesn't tolerate Black need. And so I have a lot of compassion for why they did this, but what they did was, if we ever did something that was naughty as little kids, my mom, who was home with us throughout the day and also our homeschool teacher, would often spank us. And in retrospect, I recognize that now that I have friends who are doing parenting very differently, that 9 times out of 10, when I was being, quote, naughty, end quote, I really just had a need that I couldn't express in a way that made sense to adults. I was maybe acting out a little bit, but it was mainly because there was a deeper need to be affirmed or seen or heard or just snuggled with. Or maybe I just needed a snack and a nap. And so we were often spanked for being naughty. And the thing that would happen, though, is my mom would spank us because she was home. And then when my dad would come home from work at the end of his day, he would spank us again. And this is the key part, really, for me. My dad would spank us again, and his rationale was, your mother is busy raising 3 kids and homeschooling you all and serving at church and doing all the things. She does not have the time to be teaching you and correcting you and disciplining you. So she spanked you for the actual naughty act, and I'm spanking you for inconveniencing your mom. I'm spanking you for taking time out of her day that she could have spent doing something else. And so we'd get a second spanking from dad. And you know, dad's spanking was always way more fierce than mom's spankings. And so it was really that spanking that I feared throughout the day. Oh boy, dad's gonna get home and he's gonna spank me for being spanked, for needing to be spanked. And I remember running through the Auvergne region of France where Vichy is and where Our Lady of the Sick, she who cherishes our hot mess, lives, and remembering those stories of being double spanked. And I just dropped to my knees and touched this volcanic rock ground and started to cry because I realized that's when I learned, Christina, it's not okay to be human. It's not okay to need support, affirmation, teaching, correction, even discipline. That's not okay. You have to show up fully self-actualized. Everything is already, but you've nailed it all. You've beat it all. You've won at it all in order to be acceptable. In order to not only just be acceptable, but to avoid punishment. That's when I learned that I, just being my human self, was never going to be enough. And my parents, of course, were proxies for this white patriarchal God. And they understood that with this God, and in the theology that I grew up in the Black Pentecostal community that I grew up in, sickness, just being sick with the chicken pox or being sick with the flu or being sick with sickle cell anemia, any sickness meant that you were not good enough. You weren't holy enough. You weren't acceptable to God. And actually, you needed to clean yourself up. You needed to pull yourself up by your bootstraps before you could even be presentable to this God, who frankly was an off-planet Father Sky God who really didn't want much to do with humanity at all, other than to come down, rain, hail, and brimstone on us and use us for his purposes. Being used by God was the most important thing. Knowing God and being known by God, being held by God, being cherished by God, that wasn't part of the theology. It was about being used. And in order to be used, you had to be perfect and you had to have it all together. And I learned this as a little girl. Christina, it's not okay to not be okay. That is unacceptable. And you know, honestly, I am not the only person who's experienced things like that. I know that I'm a unique human being and my story is unique. And also, we can look across our society and see the same messages being repeated over and over and over again in our carceral system, in our education system, in our capitalist system, where you have to produce, you can't be sick, you can't be needy, you have to just produce in order to be valued. This white patriarchal God's view of us as simply pieces on his chessboard has infiltrated every aspect of our society. And Natasha Morin, an incredible Black artist, wanted to investigate this sense of not feeling safe, valued, and loved. And the way she did that, the way she sort of investigated our anti-nurturing society, is by asking Black people all over the country, point blank, just on the spot, to say, what would this world look like? And what would this world need to look like in order for you to feel safe, valued, and loved? What would this world need to look like in order for you as a Black human being to feel safe, valued, and loved? She's acknowledging that this world isn't safe for really anybody's. In particular, she was looking at Black bodies, and she compiled all of them in this wonderful book called Black Imagination. And one of my favorite responses is by Ibo Barton, a Black trans man who lives in Seattle. And this is Ibo's response to the question, what would the world need to look like in order for you, Ibo, to feel safe, valued, and loved? Ibo says, in a world where I feel safe, valued, and loved, there would be skyscrapers filled with chairs where cisgender, able-bodied, affluent, straight white men and women could take several seats. for months at a time. We'd call them greenhouses to ensure their growth and sweat from sitting down. Black and Indigenous women, including trans women, because trans women are women, would burn down what they wished. After taking a long vacation from not having certain people around, they could lead what they wanted, appoint trustworthy rebuilders. Masculinity would be checked and have its own skyscraper. I would live there for months. I would return to new society unapologetically soft and willing. I would know growth and sweat. I would be unafraid to call myself, quote, man, end quote, to call myself transgender man. I would be a mixed Black transgender man and still be soft and willing and not hated and not afraid. My art would be art and not always be, quote, brave, end quote. I wouldn't have to be political because of who I am. My art would be art and not always be activism when I wasn't even trying to be. My art would be happy sometimes. People would consume my art because it was art. I wouldn't need to put on my white woman voice to get bills paid or discounts or attention. I could just be myself and maybe not have to pay bills or need discounts, but I'll always need attention. In a world where I feel safe, valued, and loved, I could walk down the street in any neighborhood at any time and not wonder if it's my Blackness, brownness, racial ambiguity, transness, gayness, or gender ambiguity that is killing me. That's Ibo Barton's response in Black Imagination by Natasha Marin. Somehow we've learned in our society that our need is abhorrent, that our humanity is abhorrent, that needing support, needing guidance, needing help, wanting to be seen for who we are is not okay. It makes us unlovable and worthy of punishment. And as Ibo Barton points out, we've been programmed that way. That's why Ibo suggests these skyscrapers and we can go and get deprogrammed so we can return to society free of this fear of showing our need, of showing our humanity, of being vulnerable in community. And as I have awakened to my own aversion to need, I have sought out spiritual spaces where I can nurture and cherish my need and nurture and cherish the needs of others. Because I've noticed that only to the extent that I'm able to love my mess, am I able to love other people's mess and see it as art and not trash. When I see my own mess as art and not trash, I can value the mess of other people and see it as art and not trash. And one of the pathways to this truth has been identifying and connecting with a divine being who relates to me as a Black woman and has been known for hundreds of years for being the one who cherishes the messiest of ourselves. The Black Madonna of Vichy, who's officially called Our Lady of the Sick, popped on the scene in the 1100s, and like many Black Madonnas, magically appeared, according to the legend, next to a spring, next to a hot spring. Now, this entire region is surrounded by volcanic mountains, and so, of course, there are hot springs everywhere. It's fabulous. The water is so tasty. The water feels good, and it heals the body. And so people from all over the ancient world, well, at this point, it was the medieval world, would come to this hot spring where this Black Madonna lived, and dip in the hot springs, and they would be healed. And now imagine the types of people who would come. It wasn't the people who had access to medical facilities. It wasn't the people who were healthy and well. It wasn't the people who were in the center of society. It was the people who were on the margins. And if you look at the stories of the people who have loved this Black Madonna, it was the migrants. It was the Africans. It was the abused women. It was the queer folks, the people who were not invited into society, didn't have access to medical attention, much less access to other aspects of society that would nurture and nourish them. And so they would come to Our Lady of the Sick because they knew she's here for everyone. No matter what we need, we can come to her and we can be healed. We can be healed. And one of the things that's really fascinating about this particular Black Madonna is that, like many other Black Madonnas during the French Revolution, she was destroyed. Many Black Madonnas were targeted by the French revolutionaries. And in this case, she was destroyed, and the revolutionaries carried off her body. And a few miles away, they found the head. They found her head. So she had been decapitated. But the people in the village who loved her found her head and decided to build her a new body. And it took them several years to wait for the war to end, and then also get the resources that they needed to build her a beautiful walnut body to match her beautiful walnut head that's from the 1100s. And so she was pieced back together. Her heart, her head, and her body were pieced back together by the love of the people who cared for her. And this is the story of several other Black Madonnas that were lost during the Revolutionary War or stolen. They were rescued by the people, not the establishment. They were rescued by the people in the villages who relied on them for hope and support in difficult times. And Our Lady of the Sick was no different. But one of the things that's interesting to me about Our Lady of the Sick is that she was especially known for being connected to the people on the margins. Certainly in her heyday, the most important people of the day came and would dip their feet in her pools and pray for her blessing and pray for her healing. But over time, Vichy became such a popular spa town that most of the important people stopped coming to Our Lady of the Sick. They had access to the amazing spas and the amazing casinos, and they were kind of on their Vegas weekend, and maybe they would, you know, stop by her chapel and her little spring on their way out of town. But for the most part, capitalism offered them all they needed. They were able to get their needs met, so to speak, through the dazzling array of options that they were offered in this swanky spa town. And so over the years leading up to the revolution, it was really only the poorest of the poor, the most marginalized folks, who continued going to see Our Lady of the Sick. And so she became known in the region as someone who was especially connected to the people who had big need, who perhaps didn't look the way that society valued, didn't love the way society valued, didn't have an able body in the way that society valued, didn't have the anatomy that society valued, didn't have the cognitive and mental functioning that society valued. She was there for the Island of Misfit Toys. She was there for the ones who had the biggest need, and that society had said, you're gross. We see you kicking around in your blood, but we're just gonna go the other way. And she, like the voice of the divine in the Ezekiel passage, looked with compassion on those folks and said, live, and I'm gonna be here supporting and nurturing you as you live. The first time I encountered Our Lady of the Sick was in 2018. It was the year that I went on a 400-mile walking pilgrimage across central France in search of these Black Madonnas. And she's one of the 18 ancient Black Madonnas that I visited on foot. And this is what I wrote about the Black Madonna of Vichy in my book, God as a Black Woman. At the altar of Our Lady of the Sick in Vichy, France, the symbolism of her own decapitation overwhelmed me. As I spoke to her of my own severed head and body, the ways in which I was disconnected from my need, I cherished the fact that she represented an image of the divine that understood my particular pain. Like me, she had been separated from her body for years, and like me, she had been pieced back together. I knew I could tell her my messy truth, that I was barely pieced back together and that I was often at war with my embodied need. I knew I could tell her that my healing journey was fitful at best. I knew I could tell her that even after years of trauma therapy and mindfulness meditation and embodiment practice, it still often feels like my body, my emotions, and my heart are miles away from my overdeveloped, overeducated, overlinear brain. I knew I could tell her that every step forward is followed by two steps back. I knew she understood because she too had been severed, and she understood that the process of being pieced back together is a sacred weaving that cannot be rushed. Her story of being healed years after being decapitated was proof to me that my healing does not have a deadline and that every step in any direction belongs. As I stood boldly in my need before her, I comprehended that she wasn't playing when she arrived on the scene in the Middle Ages and said, "Y'all can call me Our Lady of the Sick. That's who I am, and that's who I'm here for." And the piecing back together begins by accepting that she loves our decapitated humanity as is. We begin to heal when we walk our unhealed selves up to her altar and share our need. Pain notwithstanding, so much of our desire for physical, mental, and emotional healing stems from our desire for society to care for and nurture us. Our collective global experience of the COVID-19 pandemic attests to this truth. In the white patriarchal God's society, to have need is a social death sentence, and it is the best way to be excluded from any safety nets that are available. In particular, the elderly, people who live with chronic physical and/or mental illness, the disabled, and non-male people of color can attest to the fact that our anti-nurturing, inaccessible society shuns them and scorns their need. When we seek physical healing, we are not just looking for physical wellness. We are also looking for social acceptance and access to the goodies that white patriarchal God only reserves for the needless. But at Our Lady of the Sick, she who cherishes our hot messes altar, everything belongs, and our need is our special offering to her. You see, unlike the white patriarchal God, she welcomes our need because it reminds us to seek her out. She knows that we're much more likely to bypass her healing spring when we have the resources to numb our needs at the swanky spa across town. She knows she offers something the swanky spa can never provide. She knows that only her unquestioned, undeniable, unavoidable, unconditional love can piece us back together after the white patriarchal God's society has decapitated us. At her magical spring, she redefines the concept of healing. She doesn't promise to eradicate our need so that we can then fit into the white patriarchal God's concept of who's valuable. Instead, she offers to heal our relationship to our body. She reconnects our head and body so we can know how we feel and what we need. And we can begin to ask people for what we need and start to build communities based on meeting need rather than scoffing at it. In fact, Our Lady of the Sick exists most powerfully in our collective communities. Her matriarchal leadership inspires us to co-create the healing springs we need. We become her when we work together to share and meet our needs. Our Lady of the Sick lives on in communities that see need not as something to be silenced, but rather something to be reclaimed. That's an excerpt that I wrote on She Who Cherishes Our Hot Mess, and I hope it nourishes you as it has nourished me. When I think about the divine being who, in the Ezekiel passage, looked upon that baby, that abandoned baby, who is screaming in its need, doused in its own blood, umbilical cord still not even cut, completely uncared for. When I see that divine being coming and saying, live, I'm here for you. I got you, bring your needs to me. None of this mess scares me away. It might scare other people away, but it doesn't scare me away. I love you. I see you. Share your needs. Be vulnerable. Live, live. Create these communities. Be she who cherishes our hot mess. Embody me. And do this in your community so that you can all live. Ashe and amen.
Thanks for listening, friends. To learn more about Middle Church, visit middlechurch.org. You can help grow this movement of love and justice by rating us on Apple or Spotify and by sharing this episode with a friend or two. Send us an email at info@middlechurch.org if you have any questions or comments. We hope you'll come back next week. Bye for now.